Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It's hour two. We're live in Los Angeles, which, of course, is part of America. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. Tonight, LeBron James plays. Hopefully, he'll get the call. He'll get the whistle. Certainly not going to get any help from his teammates, so hopefully he gets help from the refs. I said it right there. So, Greg Cosell in a couple minutes. So, I was thinking about this, Joy. So, tonight, Joy Taylor joining me. Jacksonville hosts Miami. Now, that's not – it's funny because it's the only game this year. The game's actually about people who are not playing. Miami's really about when's Tua going to play.
Yep.
He's not starting. And Jacksonville going into the season was about, oh, my God, they're going to get Trevor Lawrence. So the two quarterbacks this game is about are not even going to play tonight. But it's very interesting. Where stars land matters. So for Joy and I as broadcasters, we can go and have seven different employers. We can work from 23 years old to, 73 years old. But as a pro athlete, if your first team doesn't get it right with you, your career is often screwed. I mean, it really is. There are very few reclamation projects like Drew Brees in the history of the NFL. And what's interesting, Kobe Bryant, the reason the late Kobe Bryant is a legend, a big part of it is Lakers. Okay? Because Shaq wouldn't have gone to Charlotte where Kobe was drafted. Agents directed Shaq to L.A. because L.A. had gotten Kobe from Charlotte, and Phil Jackson would never coach Charlotte. It mattered that Kobe landed in Los Angeles. Mike Trout would be a much bigger star if he was a Yankee and not an Angel. Okay, Anthony Davis was irrelevant for 7 years in New Orleans. Now he's one of the talking points of the league. You don't think Giannis would be bigger in Miami with Jimmy Butler? I mean, you don't think New York or L.A. would matter. People always say markets don't matter. Yes, they do. Kevin Durant's way more relevant when he played in San Francisco with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Steve Kerr coaching. So Jacksonville, it matters that Trevor Lawrence for the NFL is getting a big break. He's not going to play in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's 1-1, could be 2-0. They're 1-1. They're favored tonight if they win, they're 2-1. Then they face Cincinnati and Detroit in two of the next 3 weeks. Let's say they lose to Houston. Not sure they will. They're 4-2. Boom, they're out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. They're done. They're out. It's over. Who's awful in the NFL? The Jets and the Giants. New York City. This is a huge break for the NFL. So I'm not saying it's a break for Trevor Lawrence. Jets and the Giants, you can roll your eyes at it. I'm with you on that. But if Jacksonville wins tonight, Gardner Minshew's chewing the league up. And if you start looking at that Jacksonville schedule, there's a lot of potential of shootout W's there. So, nobody's going to say it, but I don't think it was the worst thing in the world when Anthony Davis went to the Lakers. I don't think it was the worst thing in the world when Kawhi went from Canada to the number 2 market. I don't think that was the worst thing in the world. All right, Greg Cosell, 41 years working at NFL Films, that kind of loyalty is redeemable. Not a lot of people are that loyal. And he is now joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. All right, so I've been wrong a lot in my life. I thought the Raiders were going to be kind of a mess, but I got to be honest with you. They're wildly fun to watch. They've won a couple of high-scoring games. So when you look at the tape, Greg, what are the Raiders doing that you like?
Well, I think it all starts – well, two things. Number one, I think Josh Jacobs is a top 3-4 back in the league. I think he's a really strong, powerful runner who also has great explosive feet. But I would say that John Gruden's doing a really good job, and here's why, Colin. Because I think Derek Carr, at his core, is not a timing and rhythm thrower, and he's also not a turn-it-loose thrower. He's not an aggressive thrower. He's not – that's in your DNA. He's not like that. So I think when you're John Gruden, what do you have to do? You've got to define the route concepts for him so it shows quickly within the timing of his drop. So you make him a timing and rhythm thrower by what you do with your pass offense. And I thought that was really evident on Monday night against the Saints because the ball came out quick. You know, he normally is not like that. He normally holds the ball and gets himself in trouble. So I think Gruden is doing a really good job understanding the strengths and the limitations of his quarterback.
Good stuff. That's fascinating. Cam has always been big, strong, and athletic. I was surprised and am surprised in week two against Seattle at his efficiency throwing the ball. He and Edelman were very good. N'Keal Harry and Cam looked to have forged, at least early, some level of a relationship. Has he surprised you as a pocket passer?
No, I think he's looked very much the same as he was in Carolina. He'll miss some with poor ball placement, including what should have been the game winner with 13 seconds to go, and we never would have gotten to the final play of the game. He had Edelman on a seam route, and he threw it too high and too hard, and it should have been the game-winning touchdown. In fact, by NFL standards, that was not a difficult throw. So he will miss some, but he will also make special plays, and I think he was close to 96% of the Patriots' offense in that game. But and, you know, Edelman obviously is really, really good. But we'll see. I mean, N'Keal Harry, he's I know you're a Pac-12 guy. He does not move really well, Colin. I mean, he's I'm trying to figure out what exactly he can become in this league because there's not a lot of juice to his movement.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. So Russell Wilson, I've loved him. You know, that's one I got right early on his career. I said he reminds me of a right-handed Steve Young. There's just something special. It's innate.
Yep.
It's just innate. Whatever it is, there's an escapability, a missability. Some athletes just naturally can feel pressure. This year, I mean, good God, he's got 11 incompletions in two games, and that includes facing Belichick's defense. Is there anything schematically that you've looked at, Greg, and said, okay, this is what he's improved on? What is it this year?
By the way, 11 incompletions and 9 touchdown passes. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I'd answer that question a little differently than you asked it. Here's what I would say about Russell Wilson. We know he throws a great deep ball. We don't need to spend time on that. He does something better than anyone I've ever seen, and I've been doing this a long time, as you know, Colin, and you would never teach a quarterback to do this. He has the ability, when there's pass rush pressure, to drop his eyes, look at the rush, which you would never teach anybody to do, then refocus his eyes downfield and still make throws at the intermediate and deeper levels. I can't recall in all my years doing this seeing anybody do that. And I think that makes Russell Wilson incredibly special.
Yeah, I mean, there's an old saying, when you're running around as a quarterback, keep your eyes down the field. That's the difference. That's a warning. Never take your eyes off a receiver when you're running around and looking for space. So to your point, if he's doing it, it goes again. You know, there are certain athletes that break the rules.
No question. And you know, and the thing, again, I mentioned the deep ball, but because he's so special with his movement ability and the deep ball, we forget overall that he is a really good passer. He's extremely accurate. His ball placement is precise. He does not miss throws. Yeah. You know, we talk about quarterbacks who are good players and potentially great, and they miss throws. Russell Wilson, you're hard-pressed to say, oh, he misses throws. He's a very precise ball placement passer.
Okay, Cowboys offense so far. We know they have a trio of good receivers. We know Zeke. They're never quite as good in the O-line when Tyron Smith is out, although his backup this weekend looked okay. So what's your takeaway? Two games in, Mike McCarthy, Dak, what do you like? What do you not like?
Well, I think they're playing to their personnel. Through two games, they've played with 11 personnel, meaning one back and three wide receivers, on 85% of their offensive snaps, far and away the highest total in the NFL. And I think now with Blake Jarwin injured for the year, we're going to see that continue. I think it really plays to their personnel. I think it plays to Zeke as well in the run game because you're going to get nickel corners on the field and you're going to get the defense spread out a bit. And I think that Dak's throwing the ball extremely well. I thought the touchdown he threw to Schultz in the second half last week against the Falcons was just as good a throw as you can make in the red zone. Yeah. So I think right now their offense looks very, very good. Look, last week it started off poorly because of turnover fumbles, not because they did anything really wrong in terms of schematics or personnel. So they're going to be a fascinating team to watch. I think they could put up a lot of yards and a lot of points this year.
Justin Herbert literally got 10-minute heads up. Go start against the Super Bowl champs. And it's debatable whether he even got many first-team reps.
Yep.
which to me, this is a timing league as a quarterback. So what did the film say on Justin Herbert? My eyes told me it was pretty darn good.
It was pretty darn good. And I know you're a Pac-12 guy, so you're familiar with him. I thought, see, this was a case, too, where I thought the coaching staff did a great job of settling him in the game early through his first couple of possessions. Quick game throws, basic concepts, screens, things to give him completions. That's what a quarterback wants early. But then he made some special, special throws. The 25-yarder to Allen, the 14-yard touchdown to Guyton. You know, I think that 14-yard touchdown to Guyton, because Guyton looked open on TV, I'm not sure people realize how special a throw that was. And you know what I really like about him, Colin? He turns it loose.
Yeah.
Now, if he keeps starting, he'll have a game where he throws three picks. There's no question that's going to happen because he's an aggressive DNA turn-it-loose thrower. So that'll happen. But I also thought, and this is not an X and O point, but I thought he played pretty poised, pretty composed, particularly in the second half when Spagnuolo clearly increased the blitz frequency. So I thought it was an impressive start. He showed a lot. There's a lot to work with. He's a talented kid.
Yeah. So is Carson Wentz, but right now he's struggling. Yeah. What does the film say on the Philadelphia Eagle quarterback?
Well, I think there's clearly mechanical issues. He's a bit of an overstrider, and because his delivery is not naturally compact, when you overstride like that, you have to hurry up your upper body to catch up, and he's sailing a lot of balls. But the other point I'd make, and it may stay the same now that Jalen Reagor's out, but last week they played with two tight ends on the field on 80% of their offensive snaps. I think in today's NFL, it's tough to create big explosive chunk plays in the passing game like that. So I'm very curious to see how they continue going forward. Obviously, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert are two very good tight ends. But again, this is just my interpretation. I just think it's hard to create explosive plays at the intermediate and deeper levels when you're playing so much with two tight ends. Then you get stuck with having to have 12, 13, 14 play drives, and that's very hard to do consistently in the NFL.
Never been a fan of Ryan Tannehill. He's fine, nothing special, C+, but it works. It works in Tennessee to some level. Is that, again, is that a coaching issue? Is he developed? What is it?
I think it's a combination of talent and philosophy. It's a run-first offense. There's a ton of play-action boot. He's very mobile. But I will say this, Colin, since he became a starter last year and through this year, he's thrown the ball very accurately.
Yeah.
He was very, very good on third down last year. He looks like a very good quarterback right now, but I think it's a very good marriage of talent and scheme. And by the way, that's what coaching is. That's what should happen with quarterbacks. There's very few transcendent quarterbacks.
Yeah. So I remember watching Josh Allen at Wyoming against Iowa and Oregon. He was a little bit of a hot mess. He was wild. And then his first year in the NFL, Greg, he was wild, just a big arm. And I thought to myself, you can't win in the league like this. Now I watch him this year, and he's under control. His completion percentage is way up. Now, I do believe some of it is Stephon Diggs helps a lot. But is this the new Josh Allen? Because I didn't think this was in his repertoire, accuracy under control.
Well, I think that he may always have a little bit of a wild stallion element to his game, Colin. But I think, look, last week he put up big numbers. They played a Dolphins defense that plays a ton of man coverage. You know what you're going to get. I thought Brian Daboll did a great job scheming up certain route concepts. Obviously, Stephon Diggs, because Byron Jones went out after about 17 or 18 snaps, and they played the rookie corner from Auburn matched on Diggs, and Diggs did a nice job. Allen made some very, very impressive throws in this game with great accuracy. I think he missed a few too, believe it or not, that he had that were there. And he may always be one of those guys as well. And last week, they really limited the design runs. I think maybe there was one design run for Josh Allen last week against Miami. But the week before, there were many, many. So, you know, he's an improving player. I think his mechanics will always be what they are, and you always wish they could be better. But that just may be the way he throws a football.
Yeah, yeah. Big Ben still misses open targets. It's kind of you get Big Ben's talent. Sometimes he's erratic. It's same with Cam. Sometimes these big, strong athletes, you get the upside, but they're not mechanically always on. So to Josh Allen's point. Now, The one thing, I've watched every snap of the Rams this year. There is so much misdirection. They move the pocket. They're so multiple and variable. It's just a pleasure to watch if you love football. So let's talk about the Rams, and then you can go into your big play of the week.
You took the words right out of my mouth. They're one of the most fun offenses to watch. I think Sean McVay is really good. I think he's learning more and more each year. I think with the play action boot, the misdirection, the motion, all kinds of things. You know, what they do is they grab eyes of defenders who think they're right, and McVay makes them wrong. And that's really what you're trying to do. And I think that the play I chose is very reflective of this. And let's go to it right now. So let's start the play. And this was actually the 28-yard touchdown last week to Tyler Higbee.
Yeah.
And they did some really cool things here, Colin. And first of all, you're going to see two tight ends in a closed formation to the field. You rarely ever see that. Then you get two wide receivers to the boundary side of the formation. And what the Eagles play here is man-to-man coverage. Now, Higbee, it's really important. He is inside. And I'll tell you why that's important, because it's man coverage. So he gets a linebacker, because this is base offensive personnel. And as I said, it's man-to-man coverage. But Higbee gets a linebacker on him, not a receiver, a corner. And then you're going to get the jet motion by Woods and the crosser by Reynolds. And then you're going to get Higbee on the throwback misdirection screen off boot action, play action boot by Goff. So there's a lot going on here now for a defense to have to decipher. This is really difficult. You see the play action boot. You see Higbee crossing the field on the throwback screen, a throwback wheel. Really difficult to defend. And if we go to the end zone shot of it, you're going to see what's so difficult for Nate Gary, the linebacker. He's man to man, so he should not take his eyes off Tyler Higbee. But with the jet motion, with the boot action, there's so much that grabs his eyes that he just loses Higbee. And this becomes what's essentially an easy throw for a touchdown. So this was really, really well done.
Yeah, and if you don't watch, they do such
a good job with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, nobody in the NFL makes you think they're going one way and go the other. They are constantly in flux. Philadelphia and Dallas have looked confused, utterly confused on a dozen to two dozen plays.
They make you play with your eyes and make you wrong. And that's what they do so, so well. There were 10 plays like that, not all touchdowns, obviously, in the game against the Eagles, where defenders just played with their eyes incorrectly because there's so much they're trying to digest, or they think they have to digest.
Yeah. Greg Cosell, 41 years, NFL Films. Good talking to you, Greg. Loved it.
All right, Colin. Thanks so much.
I learned so much with him. Just so many things you pick up.
I love his big plays.
Yeah, but just the whole thing there, when you put Tyler Higbee as the inside corner, that makes a linebacker guard him, and the linebacker doesn't run. Higbee's a very fast tight end. Now you're like, just moving the tight end one spot in changes the whole dynamic of the play. It's so much of that. That's very New England.
So McVay has his genius card back?
Yep, he's been reinstated. Sometimes people lose their license.
That's true.
Lose the genius card on the show, but it has been reinstated proudly. coming up next, why Baker Mayfield has to win over the next 3 weeks. Really important matchups for reasons that are not obvious.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tonight on Thursday Night Football, Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Dolphins take on Gardner Minshew and the Jaguars exclusively on NFL Network.
Jacksonville wins. They're out of the Trevor sweepstakes. They are.
It's like you said earlier, there's a lot of implications for tonight, because after seeing Herbert and Burrow, if the Dolphins lose tonight,
it's time for Tua.
I don't know if it is time for Tua, but that conversation is going to be a go.
Yeah. So, you know, whenever I talk about Baker Mayfield, I often bring people on, let them talk about it, because you don't think I'm on it. You think I've got something against him, although I've been incredibly right all the time on Cleveland. But nonetheless, I think the organization in the next four games will make a decision on Baker Mayfield. This general manager did not draft him. This head coach did not select him. They inherited him. And it's really easy in professional sports as a general manager to bail on somebody else's picks. It's much tougher to bail on your own, because you'd have to acknowledge, oh, I screwed up, to the owner. The next 4 weeks are really crucial. Washington, Dallas, Indy, Pittsburgh. Washington and Pittsburgh have scary pass rushes, and Indy's is emerging as really good. Why does it matter? Mayfield, according to Pro Football Reference, is awful under pressure. He completes 35% of his throws under pressure, bottom of the NFL, 29th. He's even worse. Quarterback rating is 24. He's not only the worst quarterback in the league, he's 33rd. Like, there's a non-starter better than him. In a league where many of the good young quarterbacks are excellent escaping pressure, Baker is terrible under pressure. And Washington this week brings heat. Pittsburgh in a month, best front seven in football. The Colts acquired DeForest Buckner. They've got a healthy pass rush. Now, Dallas doesn't, and you're going to get into a shootout in that game at Dallas where Dak usually plays really, really well. So I think the new GM and the new coach will make a decision. And if Baker, whose numbers now aren't good under pressure, faces two, maybe the two best pass rushes in the league, Washington and Pittsburgh.
Washington leads the league in sacks, Pittsburgh second, Indy third.
There you go, folks. They're going to make a decision in a month. He faces the three best pass rushes in the NFL. People make decisions privately long before they make them publicly. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
The Jets have looked terrible in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Understatement.
You know, as a Jets fan for 1 year of my life, I feel like I'm free to be critical of the Jets whenever I like.
Oh, please do.
Yeah. Safety Bradley McDougald, who joined the team in the Jamal Adams trade, has a theory on why things have gone so badly. He said, it all goes back to practice. We've had some slow practices and it correlates to the game. We need to have a complete full week of just great practices, and I don't think we've had that yet. Linebacker Avery Williamson agreed and added that they don't start fast at practice, and that shows in games. But in a shocking turn, Adam Gase does not agree with his players.
No.
He said, I haven't necessarily felt that. I felt like guys were flying around. Nobody said anything during the week. I felt like we had really good tempo at practice. Sometimes an individual guy, if he wants to change something, we talk about it. It's an open forum. If somebody doesn't like the way something's going, we can easily speak up.
Yeah, except for he's not a relationship guy, so maybe players don't feel comfortable speaking up. I don't know. I'm not there. All I know is more grumbling from a player about Adam Gase. That's all I know. That's and I'll leave it at that point. I don't want even no conjecture. Fact. Another player grumbling about Adam Gase.
Yeah, I mean that's not a direct I don't get along with him shot, but we are on a different page than the coach as far as how practices are going statements. Can't argue with that. I'm not in the building either, obviously, and I haven't talked to anyone in the building there to know if this is a thing or not. It's just
okay. So they're going to lose to Indianapolis, who has a great pass rush, and they don't have any weapons. They're down to like scout guys as wide receiver. But they better have their receivers in 2 weeks because they host Denver, and they're going to get raced this weekend. They'll get smoked. If they don't at least compete with Denver, my prediction is privately upstairs, Joe Douglas and Christopher Johnson will decide he's done.
They rank 31st in pass blocking.
They're awful.
And 31st in points per game, 24th in points allowed.
Go look at their wide receivers this weekend they're using. They are not – they would not make – 80% of the rosters in the NFL, and they're starting for the Jets. Now, again, you know, I know you think I love Darnold. They're literally falling apart, and once again, they've got no depth at key spots. None.
But the thing about Gase is, if your theory or the rumblings that you're hearing, or just reality, like the Jets end up being the worst team in the league, and they are in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes.
Yeah.
Do you want Gase being the one who brings Trevor Lawrence into the league?
No. If this team's 2-15, we move on and go. Yeah.
Because last year, I gave Gase a pass. You lose Darnold to mono. It's not all your fault, right? You lose your starting quarterback for a significant portion of the season.
I'm not saying Darnold's not culpable. I'm not saying he's without. But that's not the issue. Who in the world could win with this mess?
They're 31st in pass blocking.
And they drafted three offensive linemen. They drafted two offensive linemen, then acquired two others. They've been building that thing for 4 years. It's been awful for 4 years.
So there's been some speculation that age is catching up with Drew Brees in his 20th season. But at 41 years old, Brees doesn't think his performance has started to decline.
I feel good. I feel good. Borderline great. At the end of the day, I am focused on putting us in position to succeed, you know, making great decisions, both in the run game and the pass game, you know, whatever is predicated on, you know, my decision, my ability to get us into the best play. And I don't care how we do it. I honestly don't. I just want to win football games.
I do kind of feel like everyone is overreacting a little bit to week two. Like, sometimes we tend to do this. It's a primetime game.
Right, that's
so
fair.
Everyone's watching.
It's the only game that was on.
It's the only game that's on.
That's fair.
So we're a little critical because they did beat the other old guy in Tom Brady in week one in pretty convincing fashion.
But it was the defense. They blocked a punt. They got a pick six.
There were some things that happened during the game that were outside of Brady's control. They also didn't have Michael Thomas, which is, I mean, he's the top receiver, one of the top receivers in the league. That's a significant loss to have on the offensive side of the ball for Drew Brees. I didn't think he looked great, but I do think it's a little bit of an overreaction.
That's fair.
To Drew Brees' decline. He didn't look great, and because he's 40 years old, and as soon as we start to see something, we're like, up, he's losing it. I just think I'm going to give it a couple more games before I think it's – look, I think this is Drew Brees' last year. I do.
Oh, I told you the other day, I was told he had to be talked into playing. He had kind of decided, I'm out. You know, there's a network. I think NBC has said, we'll pay a bunch of money. He's ready. I heard they were kind of like, give us another year, buddy, and he was ready.
And that doesn't surprise me. If you look at the way the Saints are set up, they've gone all in this year on making it happen. And why not? This is Drew Brees' last year. You might as well.
Have you seen their salary? Well, their salary cap situation is, I've never seen a team that is more into the moment.
But what's the other option? Why
that's
not?
Right. That's right.
It's Drew Brees' last year. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
You're never
one of the
have
greatest players of all time.
History or your franchise, you'll probably never have another Drew Brees at quarterback.
Right. Go all in this year.
That's right.
Maybe you're not going to be great for the next couple years afterwards, but you gotta go for it sometimes. I think the Rams did it a few years ago, and everyone said that they were crazy. They made it to a Super Bowl, didn't win. Okay, but they went up against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Like, I think it's worth it for this year for them to go all in. Guess what, Colin?
What?
Heat is on.
Oh, gosh. It's just one game. There's no reason to get.
No reason?
Does look like it's over. But it's been a weird. Like last night, I couldn't figure it out. Tyler Hero had the best game ever for a 20-year-old. Jason Tatum couldn't score in the first half. And late, I'm like, it's a 1-point game. How?
Because they're just. First of all, the Celtics are good defensively.
They are.
And they finally started well, the Heat did. That first quarter was actually a good first quarter. And get bound down 20 points, have to make this miraculous comeback. Tyler Hero was a star for the Heat last night, leading the team to a 3-1 series lead over the Celtics with a career-high 37 points. It was spectacular. And Jimmy Butler was raving about his teammate after the game.
That's my guy. I think the world knows that. I think so highly of him, man. And just go to show the type of guy that he is. You know, he's always willing to give the credit to somebody else. But he's done this. He's worked at it. He studied the film. He's the one that's in the gym. He's the one that's communicating like a vet to the vets. He did that. I didn't do it. Nobody else did it. Spo didn't do it. We just pump him with a lot of confidence. And I think he pumped himself with twice as much confidence. He goes out there and he performs, man. And that's on him. That's on nobody else. He's done that.
Isn't it amazing? You put Jimmy Butler in a good franchise, and now he feels like the ultimate team guy. When he was with Chicago, we're like, kind of into himself, you know, Philadelphia. He can't get along with people. You put him in a good structure, a good family. It's like, oh, he's just a great team guy.
Sometimes that's what it takes. And if you look at those organizations,
that's what they build.
Where are they? Where are the Heat?
Yeah.
I do think that there are a couple things that he said that are very important, and I've heard Tyler Hero say them in his post-game interviews multiple times as well. They fill him. They just pump him with all of this confidence and belief and back him 100%. Yes, obviously, you have to have the talent. He is incredibly talented. But when you're in a system that has a good culture, that has a championship-winning coach, that has Pat Riley, that has Jimmy Butler, and they're like, go do your thing. We trust you. We believe in you. You have the ability. And he plays like that. He's a confident kid to begin with. But when you have the backing of those kind of people telling you, like, this is your game, go take it, that does something for a young player. Like, we've talked about it. The young players are thriving in this bubble. And I think that when you're looking at a situation like this or in Denver where they have a great culture, young players need the confidence to go out there and, okay, I'm here. I'm in the playoffs. I've never been here before. We're winning. What do I do? Go play. Go play your game. And they've completely backed the young players, and they're thriving in the bubble. And I think that's a big part of it. If you look at the teams that are being successful, they have great cultures, and that's a big part of it.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Game was crazy. Joy Taylor, do we have the video? Joy was at the game last night.
I was. I went to the bubble.
Digital. And she was right behind the Miami bench. And even though it's on another network, like, you cannot stop us. You can only... You can't even contain us. I mean,
you can't.
Other networks were right there.
I was also, I've been told, it looked like I was eating nachos. I was eating Mediterranean food.
That's my
best friend Kelly sitting next to me.
Oh, that your place.
No. Like on the digital screen. So we had, like, it was girls' night. So you can see my friend Jordana, MJ Acosta, NFL Network was there, and Janice Fernandez. So we're all friends from Miami. So we all went to the game together.
You guys are all from Miami?
Well, they are all from Miami. I'm transplant, but
yeah. Look at that. I think that digital thing's a riot.
It was a lot going on, but I will say it's really fun. Like, if you have the opportunity to do it, it's pretty cool.
Good stuff. Way to go. All right. Antonio Cromartie is going to be joining us. By the way, he's a former Jet. They're going to get the number one pick, folks. The Jets or the Giants are getting the number one pick. Thoughts on that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Played in the NFL for 11 years. Almost half of them made a Pro Bowl. He'll get Hall of Fame votes. Fox Sports NFL analyst Antonio Cromartie is now joining us live. So let's get right to it. The Jets are bad. Really bad. Their schedule's one of the toughest. If they ended up with the number one pick, I like Sam Darnold, but Trevor Lawrence is out there. Would you, if you ran the franchise, bail on Darnold and get Trevor Lawrence?
No, I would not. And the reason I said that, I think Sam Darnold is a franchise quarterback. He can go out and give you everything that he needs to. They don't have the weapons on the outside, and I feel like this is a similar situation to having Mark Sanchez back in 2009, 2010, and then you go into 2011, 2012, where they didn't give him the weapons that he needed to be around him to be successful. You have a head coach that doesn't know how to use one of the best running backs in the NFL and Le'Veon Bell, and he just don't seem to have any clue about what he wants to do with this football team at all.
Adam Gase, he's struggling to get along. We had another player come out this week, two of them, Avery Williamson, said practices are slow. Is this a reality with Gase that maybe he just doesn't get along with enough good players?
I'll put it like this. I feel like the only reason Adam Gase is getting the job because of Peyton Manning. He's getting the leeway of Peyton Manning giving him his blessings of being a great coach, which is not the key. It hasn't been a great coach since he's been a head coach. And I think of the thing about having him with star players, he wants to be the face of the franchise. He doesn't want anybody else to be the face of the franchise. He wants it to be where if they're having success, it's all about Adam Gase and how he's did things and how he's changed everything around in the organization, and not about the guys that are actually out on the football field and going through the plays and doing the things they need to try to do.
Well, it also hurts him that Ryan Tannehill is actually better since he left Adam Gase. Now, I mean, it really actually hurts him because Kyle Shanahan can be tough, but quarterbacks get worse when he leaves. Tannehill's now better since leaving Miami. Now, I want to ask you about Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. I think they've looked great. Are you surprised with no preseason at all that rookie quarterbacks, those two have been this good?
Well, I just think when you look at Joe Burrow and you look at Justin Herbert from last week, I mean, they're still making mistakes that a rookie would make, but overall, it's very minimum. They're making the throws that they need to make. thing I would take away from him, but I wish he would have on that third and three or third and four. I wish he would have go ahead and scramble for the 10 yards and got the ball. I mean, got the first down rather than throw an interception on that play. But overall, these two guys are coming in and playing at a very high level. And it's sometimes unexpected, especially with no offseason, not being able to be around the guys and go through the offense the way they needed to. Had somewhat of a training camp, but it's not really wasn't a training camp where it was like, oh, I'm going to install everything that I need to install. But these guys here are showing that the offseason is not really big to have. And these guys are going out and it's just being special. Yeah, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah, no, I think you make a great point. For years and years, coaches told me we've got to have a preseason. Well, hell, you don't even have to have a good preseason for rookie quarterbacks. They don't need it. So how much do veterans need it? Now, I want to talk about a couple of old guys, Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Let's talk Brady. Pretty rough in week one, much better in week two. What is your prediction kind of for Tom Brady, the offense, going forward? Do you think it's going to work?
I believe it is, but you got to think about Bruce Arians' offense and how his offense is. His offense is a down the field, throw the ball deep, big play type offense. Tom Brady didn't have that. Tom Brady was a guy that was going to create the mismatches and throw to the guys that created those mismatches. And then most of his balls were thrown down the middle of the field to Gronk, to Julian Edelman, those guys. And you can see that similarity, what he wants to try to do. Bruce Arians wants to get the ball down the field, but Tom is like, look, we can drive down the field, dink and dunk them, and then take chunks when we need to. And, you know, I think they have to just get back to that standpoint with Tom Brady before he can feel comfortable and not let him throw the game away.
Drew Brees did not look good on Monday night. It was a lot of dink and dunk. They didn't throw the ball down the field. Half the completions to running backs. Do you think he has anything left in the tank, Antonio?
100%. I just think he's missing Michael Thomas. And he's missing his star receiver that can be out there. You got to think, Emmanuel Sanders had one catch, and it was, 4 minutes left in the game? Or something like that, that was left in the game. He finally got his first catch as a Saint in that game. So it's just a point of just understanding what he's trying to do and the adjustments that he tried to make with missing his star receiver.
You know, I said this. Organizations make decisions before they tell you. They move off you. And I said with Baker Mayfield, this GM didn't draft him. This coach didn't. He inherited him. And I look at Baker Mayfield. The next 3 weeks, he faces Washington, Indianapolis, and Pittsburgh. They're the top three pass rushes in the league, and Baker has struggled against good pass rushes. I believe if he struggles the next 3 weeks, they have made a decision. We're moving off him. Do you buy that?
Oh, 100%. Unless something happened in November, December, and they have a chance to make the playoffs. But I'm just, when you're looking at it, the kid has all the weapons. You can't say he don't have anyone around him. From the running backs with Hunt, with Chubb, having Odell Beckham, having Jarvis Landry, and those guys around him. There's no excuses why he shouldn't be going out there and playing at a very high level and doing the things that he needs to try to do. Played a very bad Cincinnati defense. They won the game, but I need him to step up in games, like you say, against these top pass rushing defenses and see what he can do from there.
Yeah. Antonio Cromartie, great having you on. We appreciate you stopping by the show, bud.
I appreciate you for having me on.
Raycon's new wireless earbuds, E25 earbuds, by raycon.com/herd, 15% off, 6 hours of playtime. No, I mean, if you go look at what Baker Mayfield's reality is, he's struggling badly against pressure. He's the worst quarterback in the league against pressure, bottom two. And by the way, most guys aren't great with pressure. Everybody's passer rating comes down. He's the worst with it. The GM and the coach did not draft him. They inherited him. He's got some baggage on the side. And if you look at their schedule, three of the next four opponents are the best pass rushes in the league. And I do think they're going to sit there. Washington, Colts, Steelers, 1, 2, and 3. Now, the Cowboys and the Bengals, those games, he won't have the pass rush. But the Cowboys game, he'll get talked about a lot because it's a Cowboys game. So if he doesn't win, that's going to be the talk on Monday for all the shows. Oh, look at Dak and Baker. And the Bengal game, why that's tough is because Joe Burrow, you're supposed to now be several levels above Joe Burrow. Now you go to Cincinnati and face him. Even if you win, again, if you look like the fourth best quarterback in your division, you can't win consistently in this league being the fourth best. You're not Lamar, you're not Ben, and it appears by the second matchup, if you're not Burrow. So I do think next month they'll make a decision on Baker. I know what you're thinking. You're rooting for him. No, I'm not. I'm rooting for it to be interesting. Joy and I root for interesting. We don't root for the results. We just want stuff to be interesting. Last hour, PJ Fleck, the next Urban Meyer in coaching, and Tony Boselli. Jags, Miami, he's an all-time great. Check it out, mdriveformen.com. Burn fat, mdriveformen.com.